I'm William.
I'm Dave.
Dave is my pastor.
Willie is a hospice chaplain.
And we've been friends for more than 20 years.
We've had thousands of conversations about things that matter and things that don't.
So now we're inviting you to join in.
Today we're going to pull a topic out of the hopper and talk about it.
This is the Hopper Podcast.
The Hopper Podcast is not professional advice, just two guys spitballing. So do your own research.
Would you rather be able to control the weather or talk to animals?
Control the weather or talk to animals?
Yeah.
Boy, that is a great question. I want to do both, but okay. Which of what I would rather? I think I would rather talk to animals.
Interesting. Tell me why.
Yeah. I love animals. And yeah, I love interacting. I talk to animals anyway. I guess what you mean by talk to animals
is
that they would understand me in some sense.
Right.
Especially if we could go back and forth, it'd be talk to animals hands down. And even if I could just, I could talk to the animals and they could understand me, then I would choose that. Right now I talk to my dog Pete and he doesn't understand hardly anything. That's mostly because he's dumb, but some animals I've talked to that they can communicate, that they can understand a couple words, you know, other pets, that I've trained, but man, I've talked to animals all the time. Anyway, when I go outside, I'll talk to birds and I talk to rabbits.
You talk to birds?
I do. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
When they're near my car, I say, "Get away! I don't want."
Right. You fuss at them.
I fuss at them.
You fuss at birds.
That's right. Yeah. Yes.
I would control the weather.
Really?
Absolutely.
Oh,
I would control
man.
The weather.
Okay.
And it's interesting because, you know, I'm more a big picture person. You care more about details.
And okay.
That's what's interesting, the way we answered that way.
Yeah. Yeah.
So controlling the weather, not only would I be able to, you know, if there's drought, provide rain, if there's, you know, if I want beautiful weather for some event, I could have that. But I could also manipulate world economies and geopolitical powers.
You know,
currently, Russia would be having some very bad weather.
Yeah, I see. Okay.
All right.
Yikes.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so I guess that's...
So you're thinking that you would control weather over the entire globe.
Oh, I guess we didn't...
That's what you're thinking of, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I wasn't thinking about that, but that's okay, that's okay.
Control the weather, so
yeah.
I don't know.
Sure.
But let me tell you another thing why I wouldn't pick talk to animals.
Yeah.
Because I've had dogs my whole life,
yeah.
And I wouldn't want to hear them saying to me, "Hey, can I have a treat? Can I have a treat? Can I have a treat? Hey, do you want to scratch my belly? Can you scratch me? Can you pet me? Can I go for a walk?"
Yeah.
I would be like, "Shut up." And then 2 seconds later, "Hey, can I have a treat? Can we go for a walk?"
Yeah.
I mean, there's no way.
It'd be nonstop. Yeah.
Yeah. I want to hear what animals are saying.
I hear what you're saying. I understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
That would get annoying for sure. But somehow in my mind, I think it, you know, in conversation, if we could come to understand each other, then it might be different.
So I guess what you're projecting is that the animals' facilities would be human-like.
Because
I don't want to hear the musings of some monkey. I really don't.
Know
what I'm saying?
Like, you know what? Maybe I'm not going to be friends with a monkey, but I hear what you're saying. I would want them to still be animals, but I guess it does change their nature in some sense if they can communicate that way. But yeah, you're right. There are definitely some animals I would not really want to communicate with.
Right.
Yeah,
and you shoo that bird away, you know. You want to hear what he says to you as he's flying off.
Right.
Trying to poop on your car.
Oh, man. I like having big trees in my yard. And when we park our cars, then they're underneath these big, beautiful trees. But that means that every morning when I go out to the car, it is just splattered.
Yeah. You know, when I was in Philadelphia, the way you drove...
Yeah,
you had to be rather aggressive to get anywhere.
Yeah,
or you're going to sit for a long time. Then people behind you are going to be furious.
Yeah,
you know, there are lots of left-hand turns where there was no green arrow.
Mm-hmm.
And you're at an intersection, and you just have to like wait, and then the light turns red, and then you turn. Hmm. You know, and then maybe three people turn after you because they don't sit there for over and over and over again.
Yeah,
and so there's a lot of people running lights, and there's a lot of, you know, it's an angry city. There's a lot of people who are upset. And so you cut someone off and they're going to be screaming at you, "Hey, F you, buddy," you know, and blasting the horn and flicking you off and all that kind of stuff. And it has an effect on you.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so just imagine if all the animals were saying those things too. You know, you almost run over this raccoon, and then he's yelling at you. You know,
yeah.
I don't want to hear it.
All right, Dave. Would you rather win a gold medal in an unpopular sport or come in last in the Olympics for your favorite sport?
I think I would rather win an unpopular sport.
Yeah. So what would like an unpopular sport?
Like curling.
Curling. There you go.
Who cares, right?
Yeah. But you would want to win.
I'd rather win curling.
Than
lose at basketball.
I see. Okay.
Yeah. Or like wrestling. You go to the Olympics and be dead last in wrestling.
Yeah. Yeah.
No.
But you had your Olympic. Okay. I hear what you're saying. I think I would answer the same.
Yeah.
I think winning a gold medal would be pretty fantastic.
That would be pretty nice.
And on the other hand, we got the Olympics coming up here in just a short time. But the idea of going and competing at the Olympic level in a sport that you love would be fun.
Would you rather win a gold medal or cure a disease?
I think I'd rather cure a disease.
Yeah, I think I would too. Yeah,
I work in healthcare, and I see that.
All right, let me complicate it
so much.
Would you rather be the win the most gold medals ever?
Mm-hmm.
So you surpass Phelps.
Yep.
Or you cure toenail fungus.
Oh my. Yeah, I think I'm going to go for the gold medals.
Okay. So then let's...
I say that because toenail fungus is not that hard to cure for most people, and it's not lethal. It's not a, you know, it's an annoyance, and yeah.
Okay. Would you rather win 3 gold medals or cure psoriasis?
Oh, man. Now, I see what you're saying here. All right. Yeah, I don't know where the switch is going to be, but there is going to be a switch.
Yeah, at some point.
At some point. Yeah, I think I'm still going to pick the 3 gold medals there, but that's a tougher choice.
Yeah.
For sure. Psoriasis is a bigger issue, for sure. 3 gold medals is pretty great, though.
Yeah, yeah. All right.
Yeah.
Interesting. Would you... I got one.
Go ahead.
Would you rather be able to teleport anywhere in the world or travel back in time? So if you travel back in time, you're just observing, almost like watching a screen.
Okay.
Or you could travel instantaneously. You could say, I want to be in Greece, and you're
immediately
go to
there.
Greece.
Yeah. I think teleportation right now, I think that's what I would choose.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
This is a challenging one for me. I think I would choose the same.
Yeah.
That I would just rather just go see everything currently.
Yeah.
But man, just think that you could travel back and see
Jesus. That's an attractive option for sure.
Teaching and healing. Yeah. And I mean, boy.
Mm.
I don't know. Now that I'm thinking about it, now that we're talking it out, you could go and see like real historical events and you know, watch it in real time.
Yeah. I think the better option, is still the teleportation. Teleportation now.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Would you rather lose all of your toes or one of your thumbs?
Oh my! Yeah, that's another really hard. You've done this a whole bunch, haven't you?
I do. Yeah, I try to get it right where it's really challenging.
Right in that challenging
you're
spot.
Supposed to pick one, but you know, there are times when my kids get mad. I'm like, I can't pick. I can't choose.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. That's a tough one there. But I think at this point, I would go for all of my toes, but that's a tough one. That's a really tough one.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, those are good questions.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll do some more later.
Okay. Willie, we've been pretty busy lately, but we've got time here to roll out another episode of the Hopper Podcast.
Yeah, I'm glad to sit down with you at the microphone again.
And we said it would be on in vitro fertilization.
Yeah.
Because of, not too distant news.
Yeah, there's a lot of news going on about all sorts of what is human life before birth. And so abortion is a whole bunch in the news, as well as in vitro fertilization. And when does human life begin? And if it begins at conception, as a lot of people think it does, and we think it does, well, not just life, but human life, humans, then what does that mean for all kinds of things? We've talked a bunch about abortion in the past, but only a little bit about IVF.
Yeah, and recently there was a court case where someone dropped embryos.
That's right.
And they perished, and lost a lawsuit from the couple who was very unhappy about that.
Yeah.
That it was a wrongful death.
That's right. That's right.
And they won that lawsuit, and that raised a lot of questions. There are lots of internet memes and buzzes about, is this a human, not a human, all that kind of thing.
Yeah, that's right, because the state of Alabama had said that human embryos are to be treated as human persons in every way. Mm-hmm. And so then when someone accidentally dropped a tray, or I'm not sure what it was, and a bunch of these embryos died, that means a whole bunch of people died under the law. Uh-huh. And so that's where it came. Now, they, I think, pretty quickly reversed that because it was so unusual, so strange. Everything shut down. All the IVF programs shut down. And I think that they have reversed it. I'm not sure exactly the fallout of it, but boy, people were really up in arms about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you and I both had opportunity to consider how far we would go trying to reproduce.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
I mean, you and your wife struggled with infertility some. My wife and I struggled some. Many people I've known, lots of people at seminary, for whatever reason, tend to have this issue. It's one of the ways that God has, it's one of the opportunities I think God uses to subdue us into humble dependence and looking to Him and the whole story of my twin boys that we've issued on this podcast before of me praying that God would not only allow us to conceive, but that He would give me two babies. And there was a time when I felt in my heart that He was saying, go ahead and ask, I'm going to give them to you, and I asked for two babies and I had twin boys.
Yeah.
And we named them, he knew or he heard, and he gave.
Yeah.
So God has heard my prayer and He's given us, blessing.
Nathan and Jaden.
And so, and Jaden is Yadon and Nathan is Natan. And that's from the Hebrew, right out of the Old Testament. But, and so that's not everyone's story.
That's right.
And when you're struggling with really, really wanting a child.
Yeah.
And it's not happening.
Yeah.
And you start taking steps and measures, you have to decide where you're going to draw the line.
Yeah.
And this is the way I advise people when they ask, although a lot of people do not ask their pastors about this anymore. They're going to get a baby come hell or high water in many cases, and they're going to do whatever it takes and the ethics be damned in their mind. But for me, I was really thinking what's right and wrong and what's ethical here.
Yeah.
And I would draw the line before in vitro fertilization.
Okay.
And that would be the way that I advise other people.
Yeah.
And I have when they've asked.
Yeah.
I could certainly do this podcast or preach a sermon where I just kind of generally say, here's why ethically I think you draw the line.
Yeah.
I don't know if you even agree with that or not, but.
Well, before I even say that, let me say that what you have just expressed is pretty out of step with so much of our country. In fact, in the light of what's happened in the news, all the politicians have been tripping over themselves to say, we support IVF. There's not a whole lot that all politicians agree on. But the reason they do is because what you've just stated is really out of step with almost all of the United States, including Christians. So before we begin, before we keep going with that, could you talk some about what IVF is?
Yeah.
And let's start with that. Yeah.
Yeah. So back in the day when it first came out, they called them test tube babies.
What a terrible name.
I know.
I mean, no matter what you think about it, that's not really what they are. And that's not. Yeah. Anyway, keep going. Yeah, that's right.
It's securing the gametes or the sex genes from both partners. So you get an egg from a woman, you get sperm from the husband. And they combine these with a needle under a microscope, and they guarantee that this egg is now a genetic individual. Mm-hmm. That's my terminology. Mm-hmm. I prefer that terminology because it is an individual. Once those genes hook up into a complete human chromosome set, They'll never exist again. They've never existed before. They are an individual. And
that's right. And with in vitro fertilization, that happens outside of a mother's
right,
body.
Right. And so they'll do a number of these and create what they call embryos. Mm-hmm. And then they'll implant multiple embryos mm-hmm. in the uterus. Mm-hmm. They do multiple because a lot of them will be lost.
That's right.
Then if a woman conceives and there's the implantation, now she's got a fertilized embryo yeah. implanted in her uterus, she might have multiple.
Mm-hmm.
Then they might do what's called a reduction, mm-hmm. where they go in and abort mm-hmm. Just some of them
mm-hmm.
so that she doesn't have a dangerous pregnancy.
Mm-hmm.
So I have issue with that.
Mm-hmm.
I have issue with fertilizing or creating genetic individuals and then not giving them the opportunity
yeah.
to fully develop and thrive in life. But I do think it needs to be nuanced, and that's why we're doing this podcast, because
yeah.
we like to nuance things. But yeah, so did I answer the question?
I think so, yeah.
yeah.
So in vitro fertilization is getting sperm and egg and putting them together. Someone in a lab somewhere puts those together
right.
instead of it happening in a mother's womb. Now, and then the only way for that genetic individual, the embryo, to grow into a healthy human being is for them to implant that into a healthy
right.
womb.
And they do multiple of these because they want to, to secure those gametes.
Right,
there's
right,
a process
right.
there. And so then they'll take the others that aren't implanted and they'll freeze them.
Mm-hmm.
And at that stage, they can still be viable.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. They can be unfrozen later and used in a healthy way.
Yeah. So, but there are probably, I don't know the numbers here, but I'm guessing there are thousands upon thousands of genetic individuals who are frozen somewhere.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure.
Now, so then the question I think we have to address is, what do we think about that?
Yeah.
What do we think about, are they human beings? Is that the right label?
Mm-hmm.
I, like I said, prefer genetic individual,
mm-hmm.
But I think it's I like the word individual, not only because of the uniqueness of the set of genes, but it's also, it is a person in microcosm.
Yeah.
That the code is there and
yeah.
it's alive.
Yeah.
It has the life force and given the right environment and opportunity, it will grow into a baby, into a fully functioning adult human and grow old and die just like the rest of us.
Sure.
And that's the normal process.
So here's one of the first questions then.
Yeah.
Would you say that it will grow into a human being?
Yeah, so that's where the language is.
Yeah,
right. So the far right's going to say that genetic individual is a human being.
Yes.
And the left is going to say it absolutely is not a human being.
Right.
And I think the truth is somewhere in between those two polarizing angles. It is a human in that it is human genetics.
Yeah,
it is the blueprint for a human, and it is alive.
Yeah,
and it does die. You can kill it.
Right.
And so there are some moral implications here. But is it like taking a baby and dashing it upon the rocks?
Yeah.
No, not exactly. It's different, right?
Okay. So what is the difference then?
Well, I think that's where we need more people involved. We need more of a community that's willing to say it's not this extreme and it's not that extreme. What exactly? Let's define our terms. I do like genetic individual as a term. I'm not sure I would say a human being, but it's not that they're not a human being. It's a weird sort of middle ground. I think also the ethical question that, let me add to that, is that there's a doctor involved in conception
yeah.
every step of the way.
Yeah.
And I do believe it's the Lord who opens or closes the womb.
Yeah.
And there may be places of respect, like how far do we go if God has said no? Are we still trying to force something that then involves another person in the act of conception?
Yeah.
So there's like a party of three or more, a whole team of people helping a couple conceive. People have fewer issues with that, I think, ethically, but it is worth mentioning. Someone else is involved. And our late wonderful professor of ethics at Covenant Seminary, David Jones.
Yeah.
He stated that he was opposed to in vitro because of the reasons mentioned, and he was the one that that I remember him saying, then there's this other person involved.
Yeah.
And what is supposed to be a private and intimate mm-hmm. act of conception mm-hmm. in a marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And so it just, you got to ask some of the bigger questions. I think people get stuck on the details. I want a baby. This is a way to get a baby. What's the problem? Well, stop, pause, look at some of the bigger, like, how did God design things? How is it supposed to work?
And right, right.
How far does medical intervention go? How far do we permit it?
Yeah.
Those are all valid questions, and I think we need to be talking about those things instead of picking our two extremes and lobbing grenades across the line.
Yeah.
Let's have fair discourse.
Yeah. You know?
So, is an embryo, is a genetic individual, a human being? I said, well, it is and it isn't. Right?
Yeah. I see that you brought up two distinct
yeah.
and important issues. One is, when is it allowable or ethically okay for to kill or to allow something to die,
mm-hmm.
something or someone to die? Certainly, you know, with animals, we, you know, bugs, sometimes I squish bugs and I don't feel bad about that. So that's ending a life.
Yeah.
But of course, killing a baby, you know, who is crying and, you know, toddling around or whatever, mm-hmm. That is immoral and murder, of course.
Right.
And so that's one question. The other question that I see that you have brought up that I love is, what is the original design connection between intimacy, sex, and a baby and childbearing?
Right. Yeah. And reproduction.
Yeah. Let me address the first one. I'll give me some of my thoughts. I think the question is not directly, is this a human being? Because I think that is pretty clear. It is a human being. You're right. It's human. I mean, we define that by chromosomes, at least in some point.
Yeah. It is genetically a human, and it is alive.
It is alive. Yeah. And so that's a human being. And it may be a one-celled or a multi-celled, you know, very small number of cells,
right.
Human being, but it is a human being. The question really is, I think morally, ethically, is this a person made in the image of God? Because that's what Scripture talks about. The reason that human life is so sacred is that it is made in the image of God. And maybe the image of God requires a human being to have blood flowing. The Bible talks about how the life is in the blood. Well, you know, if it's one-celled or 10-celled or whatever, it doesn't have any blood.
Mm-hmm.
It may be something about thought or certainly, something that's that small is not thinking. It's hard to know. Maybe breathing. Yeah. You know, some people have said it's when a baby takes their first breath because life is in the breath. God made Adam, formed him, and then breathed life in him, and he became a living being.
Yeah.
And so maybe it's when the baby takes their first breath. I think it's very difficult to know these kinds of things, and I'm with you. But if we can say that this is someone who is made in the image of God— then the answer is really clear. That person needs to be protected, no matter how big or small they are.
Yeah, and I think that's where I would say that they are. And using like poetry of the Scripture, I mm-hmm. think isn't helpful in terms of like he took a breath or God breathed life into him.
Yeah.
I think what I look at here is general revelation,
uh-huh.
And that's going to help us understand specific or special revelation.
Yeah.
That I really do think Francis Collins wrote the Language of God, talking about DNA and his work on the human genome. And long before that, I had already in my own scientific thought and, you know, undergraduate work considered that DNA, like the blueprint, is really, really key here.
Yeah.
Because I was in an embryology class, and embryos look very similar when they start.
Yeah, they do.
But the blueprint takes them in very, very different directions.
That's right. That's right.
And it's all in there. We don't understand it. We don't understand how cells really communicate with each other.
That's right.
I mean, every cell is like a city in microcosm.
Yeah.
And there's just this process is really, truly amazing. It's not miraculous because it's ordinary. It happens all the time. It's part of creation. But it is phenomenal. It is amazing.
Yeah.
And to see the stages of development that come from that blueprint that are going toward the place where a baby is then birthed.
Yeah.
And, you know, to talk about, I think a more helpful passage would be in Exodus where it talks about a woman who is pregnant Yes. And if men are fighting and they damage and lose this baby, you know, they accidentally run into this woman and right. she loses this child.
Right.
They take life for life.
Yes.
Arm for arm, leg for leg, eye for eye, whatever it is.
Yes.
And the scripture's not in front of me, but I'm paraphrasing.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. So the value of that life in the womb.
Yes.
Is recorded in that passage. And that, yes. that's a law. I mean, it's a didactic law-giving moment. It's not like a poetry or something that could be, I think, more widely interpreted.
Yeah, that's yeah. right. That's in Exodus 21, 22 to 25. And yeah, that is really clear.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And so, yeah, and so I think that the fact that it's, this is the way that God is using little ones and zeros, like a computer program.
Yeah, yeah.
To create, I mean, think about computer programs. They yeah. really boil down to ones and zeros.
Ones
but
and
they
zeros,
do
that's
very
it. Everything.
Dramatically different things.
Yeah.
And that DNA, if it's human DNA,
right.
and we've put those things together
yeah.
intentionally, I think we have a moral responsibility to let it grow. Now, it may die.
Sure.
People die. Babies die. There are a lot of abortions that happen normally.
Yeah.
A lot of genetic malfunctions and different
sure.
reasons.
Sure.
And people, some people live until 110.
Yeah.
Others are cut down in war at 16 or 18 or
yeah.
whatever.
Yeah.
So the fact is it's a genetic individual that is going to be fully developed as a person.
Yeah.
And that process has begun.
Yes.
But it's still different in the sense that it's like you said, it's not like murdering a baby.
Okay, so then what is the difference then?
Yeah, I think that's the heart of this.
I'm not sure that I see it. If we're going to say this is a human being made in the image of God, then from a moral or ethical perspective, I don't see the difference.
Well, okay, so if in process of in vitro, this lab tech has a tray of embryos and drops them.
Yeah.
And they perish.
Yes.
I think that is a terrible accident.
Okay.
I think that the people who certainly put the money forth and tried to do it this way could be upset, but this is also part of the process that they chose. Okay. And it is taking it outside the womb, and it has inherent risks associated with that. But so is this person really guilty of murder or of,
well,
manslaughter.
Yeah.
You know, accidental manslaughter. That's pretty biting. That's pretty hard to...
We may have a difference in thinking about what should the law of our state prescribe versus the law of God. But I will say, I'm pretty set on, if we say that this is someone that's made in the image of God, then we need to do whatever we can to... There are accidents, I understand that, but we need to
right.
do whatever we can to protect this life. Yeah.
I think that's why I say I would... My wife and I drew the line there. We didn't have to take
right.
many steps into fertility.
Sure.
We didn't take Clomid or anything.
Yeah.
I prayed and God answered, and I'm blessed. That's not always the case.
Yeah.
I recognize that this is a wonderful thing that God did for me.
Yeah.
And I think God does that in different ways for different people.
Yeah.
But I think every Christian has these Ebenezers or monuments that they mm-hmm. can look back and say, mm-hmm. this is where God really met me.
Mm.
And this is a big one for me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't want to hopefully encourage people and not like discourage people and say, you know, this will happen, or if it didn't
oh,
happen
sure.
to you, there's something wrong with your faith or
oh,
some
right,
of the,
right, right.
the crazy things that Christians say.
Yeah.
What were we talking about? sometimes my mind goes faster than my mouth, and then I by the time my mouth catches up, my brain has moved on.
Yeah.
So we were talking about how we're going to label.
Yeah, yeah.
An embryo.
Yeah.
And that's the term that's out there. I've used genetic individual. You're saying it's a human being. It has God's image, in that this is the way God is designing. Or the blueprint for life, and it has begun.
You know, I'm not sure that I can say definitively that a one-celled human being is made in the image of God. because I don't see that exactly in Scripture. Mm-hmm. I do see that as a child, that at some point in the womb, if you lose that child, that there is, it is made in the image of God, because in Exodus there is that law very clearly. Mm-hmm. And so, but does that start at one-celled organisms? I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. But another principle that comes in here is what theologians have often described as the doctrine of carefulness. And a lot of our case laws that we have in Leviticus and Deuteronomy and in Exodus and other places talk about how we need to put sometimes literally fences, but other things as well, to be careful not to be too cavalier,
right,
about what's going on with human beings. And so yeah, there's that one famous law that says if you build a house, you are required to put a stable fence around the roof. This was at a time when people used to go up on the roof all the time. And if you don't have a fence around your roof, or if the fence is faulty and someone falls off the roof and dies, then you are guilty of murder. And the idea is that we put protections around human life. We don't take unnecessary chances with human life. And
yeah,
there's a whole bunch of laws like that and that we see. And so theologians have kind of lumped all these together and come up with the doctrine of carefulness, that we need to be really careful. And thinking through that concept, or that doctrine, a one-celled organism might be made in the image of God. I guess I'm not quite confident enough to say it, mm-hmm, but if it might be, then we should protect it.
Yeah, or at the very least, be a lot more protective in our, like you said, being careful.
I think completely.
Yeah, because I don't think that that's what's happening in that industry. Obviously, someone just dropped a tray. It was rather easy to do. They treat these embryos, or these, you know, frozen individuals, not the way that we're talking. To them, it's just like a ball of cells. It's just a little bit of tissue. That is how mainstream America, you say I'm out of step with most politicians and most Americans and,
yeah,
even Christians.
Yeah.
Well, I think one, there's just a lack of scientific understanding.
Well, that may be true. Because when, for many, many, many couples who use IVF, when they do actually have a child, then the question is, what should we do with all these frozen embryos that we have?
Right.
And usually the answer is, well, just discard them.
Right.
And I am not comfortable with that.
I am definitely not comfortable with that.
Not just not comfortable. Yeah. I'm pretty confident that that's immoral.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I remember this is giving me a flashback to when we talked about what we do with the body after death.
Yes, yes, yes.
That there's still a degree of respect that needs,
yes,
to be given to the human body.
That's right.
Even though the life force is gone.
Right. That's right.
And it just goes all, to me, it just goes all the way back, because the DNA is how God has organized for our development.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's like saying, okay, I'm going to start this computer program. And when I hit enter, this program is going to run,
yeah,
until it accomplishes this great task.
Right.
And I hit run, I hit enter, and then someone comes along and unplugs that computer, and the whole system is,
yeah,
is truncated.
Yeah.
And the result is never realized.
Right. Right.
And when we're talking about the result being human life,
mm-hmm,
then at the very least, a lot more respect and dignity needs to be given to these genetic individuals, at the very least.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So then the other thing that you brought up that I would like to talk about as well is the connection in the Bible and in life between intimacy, husband and wife, sex, and the resulting child.
Yeah.
From the very beginning, you know, Adam and Eve, Adam knew Eve, and mm-hmm, then they have a child.
Right.
And that's what's normal for procreation. Now, there's,
yeah,
a lot of stuff that is abnormal. You know, sometimes people are infertile, but that is abnormal. There's all different things that can happen.
Right.
But that is not, the normal is a husband and wife get married and have intimacy, have sex, and a child is the result of that.
Right.
And this has disconnected, IVF disconnects marriage, intimacy, and sex from childbirth.
Yeah.
In the same way that the birth control pill disconnected sex and childbirth as well. So with one, you say, oh, we can have lots of sex with no children. And the other says, we don't have to have any sex, but we can have children.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that both those disconnections are really damaging to the way that God has ordered the world. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think so. I think that when you prevent pregnancy,
yeah,
that is a little bit different.
Okay.
Than creating genetic individuals and discarding them.
Okay.
That mm-hmm. that seems like a very different moral conundrum okay. to me. But I hear you in that. I think it is valid and worthwhile to question yourself, and perhaps others, about the reliance on birth control. And the fear of becoming a parent too early, or the whole package deal.
Yeah,
we do take a lot of control into our hands.
Yes,
and there is a lack of respect there.
Yes,
and a lack of understanding God's design and purpose. But I still can't say that I'm opposed to birth control. I would still advise people to use birth control, but to think carefully. And to search their heart about the matter. And there was a time in my life when I felt like we had overused it.
Yeah.
And then we were struggling to get pregnant, and I was regretting it.
Yeah.
That I had, for fear of finances and other things, felt like I had taken too much. And this is it's a continuum. What's too much? I can't define that for you.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I can even define it for me.
Yeah.
I just know in that moment, I felt a conviction that I had gone too far.
Yeah.
With controlling our reproductive mm-hmm. abilities.
Mm-hmm.
And I was assuming certain things and taking things for granted.
Yeah.
And I think that there, after a season of repentance and acceptance of saying, whatever you want, God.
Yeah.
And if I'm to adopt or if I'm to have no kids, this is in your hands. And then sometime later is when I started praying, well, I'm going to ask for more than just conception. I'm going to ask for a double blessing.
Mm-hmm.
And that was based upon my belief that God wants to give us good gifts and that he wants to bless his children.
Yeah.
And so I hear that, but they are different.
Well, I want to separate the idea of the getting rid of a genetic individual. We've kind of already talked about that.
Yeah.
But just thinking about going along the design of God. The design of God is to have sex and children, that is procreation,
uh-huh.
To be linked. Not that every act of sex creates a child. I don't mean that, of course.
Right.
Or that the only reason to have sex is to have a child. I don't mean that either. But those things are linked. Children are a blessing from the Lord. And in a husband and wife, sex is supposed to be for husband and wife. And that is the recipe to start a family. And when they come together in intimacy, right. then the normal design of God is to start a family there, sex producing the children. And to break that link, however we do it, either by having sex does not mean children anymore, or we can have children without having sex, I think breaks something that is really important to the design. This is, and when I say that, I recognize that I'm not talking about hard and fast rules, but I want, something has really changed in our society when we introduced the mm-hmm. birth control pills. I'm not saying that birth control is necessarily bad in all circumstances, but we have completely, fundamentally broken that bond between sex and children. And I think that there's something really damaging in our society about that. I think we can see that in pornography. I think we can see that in people having, indiscriminate sex because there's no consequences. It's very easy to have sex without being committed. That used to be kind of a way to, we need to, let's bond up, get married before we have sex. That's really right. important. That's right. The design of God.
Right.
Does that make sense? That's what
course.
I'm saying.
Yeah. Yeah. And then how are you going to apply that to people is where it gets
so making
sticky.
Rules. I'm yeah. not sure. This is a place where I don't really want to make rules, but I want us to be aware that this is happening. And so to say, oh, well, if we can't make rules, then we can do whatever we want to. No.
Yeah.
Wisdom says that sex means procreation. Not 100% of the time, not always, but those things need to be linked because they've been linked for thousands and thousands and thousands of years. And then because of science, we've decided, oh, it's good to break the link.
I think I hear your point. Although you're making a 1-to-1 ratio, and sex is more than just procreation.
Of course it is.
Yeah, and so there are other reasons for a married couple to have sex.
Absolutely.
And so to remove childbearing, I mean, there's a time when that happens anyway, right?
Yeah,
married couples are to continue having sex even though menopause has taken place and they're no longer fertile.
Yeah.
But they... So it's not a 1-to-1 ratio. So therefore, there are reasons to have sex, even if you are unable to have kids, or you're preventing that for a time. Or
yes.
But I do think you do, and this is my point back to you, is you have to be thoughtful about this.
Sure.
You have to consider God's design and his purposes and his intent. And our place in history, I think, also plays a part. You know, in the Old Testament, you have as many kids as you can, period.
Yeah.
They're labor in the field. They are they're warriors in your army. You need to multiply.
They are your retirement plan.
You need to be safe, and you need as big a family and as many resources as possible.
That's right. That's right.
Which is why they sinned in taking multiple wives so they could have multiple childbearers.
That's right.
And we know that marriage is between one man and one woman.
That's right.
And we're in a place in history where if anything, we have to consider, I'm still very curious about population. I hear different things on that. And
we
talked about this before. It's a wide sweeping, we're going to overpopulate and we're not going to be able to feed everyone, or that's crazy. We have plenty of space for everybody.
Yeah.
I don't know what the truth is, honestly.
I haven't
done enough research on it.
Right.
But population control could be something that needs to be considered at some point.
Yeah.
And that means, okay, do married couples then not have sex? Well, of course they still have sex,
mm-hmm.
but we might take other measures. And there are natural measures, the rhythm method and so forth that.
Does
involve pharmaceuticals that help prevent pregnancy.
Yeah, that's right.
And so, it's a multi-orbed, it's a multifaceted sort of discussion.
It is.
But most people don't think about it at all.
Right.
They rely on just like, well, this is an opportunity for me. I want a baby. And this is a chance to have that baby, and I'll come up with the money. That's the big barrier, is all the money.
Yeah.
And they're not really thinking about...
Yeah, so IVF is really expensive.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So do you think that people... So you're saying that people should not... You advise people should not get IVF.
That's my professional advice.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
And I agree with you. I think that mm-hmm. IVF...
So that surprises me. I thought you were for IVF.
I'm not.
Yeah.
I am not. I've heard Christians talk about, there are some Christians who take this very seriously and that I respect, that would say that, and there are places that you can get IVF where they will only do one egg and one sperm at a time. That is a lot riskier and a lot more expensive because they don't always take.
Right.
And so you got to go through an entire cycle, which is it's just as expensive. It's about the same price to do one fertilized egg or 50 or 100 fertilized eggs and just keep trying. That's just as expensive. It's the same cost. But to do one, because they are convinced in the that we should not, create life, human life, that will die.
If I were in that camp, I would do three.
Okay.
And if I had three babies, I'd have three babies, and I'd be blessed.
Yeah.
But I'm that's really the first topic. What the ethics about it? If I'm respecting every single embryo, that would be the number that I would land on.
I can see that. Yeah.
Yeah, but the second issue still nags me. I'm using medicine to intervene in something that I just don't.
Yeah, I'm with you. That's part of the design thing. That's part of the design thing.
Yeah,
yeah.
But I think that's a weaker argument than the morality of this genetic individual being created and then truncated.
Yeah, yeah.
If we're going to create them, they need the opportunity to thrive.
Yeah.
I think that's the way it's supposed to be.
Yeah,
yeah.
The other thing that I will say is that there are right now. So this is another reason that I don't like IVF. I recognize that people struggle with infertility, and that is a terrible, terrible thing.
Yeah. It's hard.
It is heartbreaking, and it is such a big deal There are many couples in the Old Testament and in the New Testament, in the Bible, that struggle with infertility, and God cares about that so much. And when someone does, it is all-consuming. It is just awful. Mm-hmm. And there are so many children that need to be adopted, many little babies that need to be adopted. It is not normal for someone to be infertile, but it happens. And it's not normal for a baby not to have parents who are able to take care of them, but that happens. Mm-hmm. And God loves adoption so much, and there are many adoptions in the Bible as well. And it seems like this is a wonderful thing to me. You know how I'm so passionate about adoption. I think that is a much better avenue than IVF.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I having talked to you guys over the years, both of you, I know that you feel a little bit differently. I want my offspring.
Yeah.
I am all for adoption as well. My wife and I talked about it many, many times. Being in church planting, it never really presented the best opportunities.
Yeah.
And so it kind of slipped us by. But I still like really value it.
Yeah.
And I've often thought, hey, am I going to be one of those people that has like the whole second family thing with a bunch of adopted kids? And the fact is I just feel too tired and old for that.
Yeah. I understand that.
And that's not like, you know, this is not some sort of guilty conscience. I'm fine with the path but for me there, I really do understand a couple wanting to have their own children, and IVF does. It's like, your gametes and her gametes coming together. I get the appeal of that. And I understand that the desire, the intense desire to be a parent and and to procreate. And, you do have to think about these things more deeply. And I think that's why, you know, these laws, people are like, they think they're just crazy. Well, they're not crazy. Let's process them, though.
What laws do you mean that people think are crazy?
The recent laws that like Alabama stating that a genetic individual needs to be viewed as a human with all the rights and privileges. And I say, well, it's tricky, isn't it?
It is. For one, I think that it is when people base their entire life on a particular set of laws, then all of a sudden that's reversed and they've, you know, sunk so much money and so much time and so much of their emotional, like that, you know, I think is cruel to say the least. If we want to go that direction, I think I would be in support of that kind of direction that we would go in. Yeah.
And, you know, I still am an advocate that if you're going to fornicate, if you're going to have sex at all, then one of the design features there is reproduction.
Yeah.
And there, even the tools that are used to prevent it don't always work.
Yeah.
And people get caught up in passion, and if you're going to fool around, you might surprise yourself how far you go.
Yep. Absolutely.
Yeah. And so these sorts of things happen, but you need to know, This is a natural and normal result.
Right.
That's part of the package deal.
That's right.
And if you're going to take the responsibility to have sex, then there could be a much bigger responsibility attached to that, and you have to be willing to accept that as well.
Right.
And so if you create a genetic individual the au natural way, and you're not married or whatever, like that's another whole issue that, you know, connects to abortion.
Yeah.
I don't like, and we've talked about IUDs, intrauterine devices that prevent implantation of genetic individuals that were fertilized in the fallopian tube,
right?
Which is where they are fertilized. And they travel down to the uterus and they implant on the wall. Well, if there's a device in there agitating the wall of the uterus, it doesn't happen.
Yeah.
And that's an abortive device.
Yeah.
And there's there are pills that you can take that are abortive.
Yeah.
That chemically abort a child, and we've talked about abortion, but that's still it's a similar principle.
Yeah,
you've brought a genetic individual that will never exist again.
Yeah,
has never, you know, the numbers are astronomical. Like it's amazing.
Yeah,
this unique individual has been brought into fruition.
Yeah,
and then they're terminated.
Yeah,
there's something very wrong about that.
Yeah,
And yet, if you go back and listen to our abortion episodes, that issue is so much more complicated by how does society support people who make that mistake?
Totally. That's right. That's right.
And what tools are there available for people who you know, I think anyone can understand how you could accidentally or, you know, get overwhelmed with passion, or you dabbled and had no idea the power of attraction. And then, you know, suddenly you have an unwanted pregnancy.
Yeah.
Well, that's happened since the very beginning.
Yeah, it has. Yeah. That's right.
And there are lots of ways to deal with that. You don't have to just run to the standard spirit of the age, the spirit of the day, and just terminate a pregnancy.
Right. Right.
Don't make those assumptions.
Yeah.
We got to think. We got to process.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, this is Dave at the Hopper Podcast. Are you tired of people being divisive, angry, or even cruel to each other, especially to those with whom they disagree? At the Hopper Podcast, we want to bridge people together and listen to opposing views so we can all grow. If this sounds like a good idea to you, please like, subscribe, and share the Hopper with someone right now. Thanks.
Dave, I thought that we could talk about some of the weirdest actual jobs in the world.
Okay.
Actual jobs in the world. And maybe you've had some of these jobs. I don't know. But I got a list of some really bizarre jobs. I know that you like snakes. There is a job of someone who milks snakes, snake milker.
For sure.
Yeah. And of course, they don't create milk exactly. It's the venom, right?
Yeah.
So do you know how that works? Have you ever done that?
Yes. No, I've never done it. I've actually thought about it, though.
Okay.
It is a dangerous, dangerous job.
Yes.
You have to take precautions, and people get used to it, and often can be, bit and be in trouble.
Yeah, sure.
But yeah, you take a poisonous snake and you have a jar with a film over the top, and you get them to bite down through the film with their fangs and squeeze their head, and the venom in many cases is like bright yellow.
That's what I've heard. Yeah,
it's thick ish.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah, it's like wow, that doesn't look like it would be good in my body.
And, yeah,
and
yeah,
that's true. It wouldn't.
Well, and they use that in healthcare to save lots and lots of lives and do all kinds of things, good things with it.
They make anti-venom.
Yeah, that's right.
So if you get bit by that snake, you can survive it.
Apparently, you can make, 3,000 to 5,000 dollars a month doing that if that's your job. That's a full-time job. I mean, you can make a lot of money doing that.
Yeah.
Yeah. How about this? There's also a job that you can get if you're looking for work to be a dog food taster.
No, thank you.
Yeah. So, people spend a lot of money on their pets.
Yeah.
And so there is an actual job of tasting dog food to see if it's good or not.
Yeah. Who cares?
You got to have, a pretty discriminating taste, and maybe that's not so good.
I would not. Oh, yeah. No, thank you.
Okay, so you don't like that one?
No.
That one doesn't pay real great either.
Yeah, I would imagine. There is a job I've heard of where people have to sniff other people's underarms.
Yes, that's a real job.
A deodorant sniffer or a body odor sniffer.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And I don't have the nose for that, but I don't think I would enjoy that either.
Yeah, but that you can make pretty good money doing that.
Mm-hmm.
That's up to about $50 an hour. Because not many people want it, and those who want that kind of job, you got to have a good nose.
You
got to be able to
discern
really, really well. It takes a lot of training. There's also a job. There's not a whole lot of these jobs, but the job of professional cuddler.
I have heard of this too.
Yeah.
It's like almost like an escort service.
Sort of like an escort service, but it really is. It's not so much
cuddle.
About going out. It's just about cuddling, and it's not sexual.
Right.
But it is like human touch, physical touch, and it is cuddling. And you can make, $50 to $80 an hour, this says, being a professional cuddler.
Nope.
Yeah, that's not going to be for me. I think it's mostly going to be people who are lonely, people who aren't married or not in the circumstance that we're in.
Very upset.
I do like cuddling with my wife. And anyway, so I don't need that, and I don't want to be a cuddler.
Right.
There's also a job, and I think this is relatively new, of an intimacy coordinator. And this is someone who is on movie and TV sets to help coordinate the romantic slash sexual scenes so that the director and the writers get what they want out of the scene, and the actors are feel safe and mm-hmm. comfortable with what's going on. And so then this is a person who is an expert in doing that for those scenes.
Yeah. Man, can you imagine rolling the credits and sexual coordinator, Willie Sophie.
Yeah, right.
Like up on the screen.
I don't want that job. Yeah. But, I appreciate someone who can do that job well.
You got to take issue with some of the morality of sex scenes in movies.
Fair enough. And, but some are more, I'm with you 100% there. There's like... actual sex that pornography, I guess, and there's actual sex that happens in movies.
It's a whole continuum.
It is, and then you get to a place where you get like kids. One of my favorite podcasts, a limited series podcast called Wilder, is all about the Laura Ingalls Wilder books and TV show, and very, very interesting. Those are fiction books, and there's some question as to actually who wrote them, whether it was actually Laura Ingalls Wilder or her daughter. And they're sort of based on her life and sort of not. Anyway, fascinating podcast. But one of the things that
I know you really love those books. So
I never read the books, but I did watch the TV show.
Because of your fanboy for those books.
Yeah. I did watch the TV show when I was young and I loved it. And they did, on that podcast, they interviewed Laura Ingalls Wilder. The girl who played Laura Ingalls Wilder on the show. And she was saying that this is, they're filming back in the 70s, I think. And so she was like 14 years old, and it's just written in the script that she falls in love. And okay, so now they're going to go have a kiss, and there's just nothing. And so this is the other actor was much older, and it was like, okay, so he touches her this way, and then they kiss, and then and she said that she was really uncomfortable with it.
Right.
That's not a TV show that is known for its, immoral display of sexuality, but she was very uncomfortable with what was happening, and she was underage, and that's the kind of set that could have used an intimacy coordinator like that.
Yeah, I might take issue with it, but continue.
You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah. Anyway, there's also the job of a professional mourner, someone to go to funerals and to weep and to wail. To cry. Mm-hmm. And because the more people who are crying, in some cultures, the more people who are crying, this isn't so much in the United States, but in a lot of Eastern countries, someone who's wealthy will likely, that's part of the funeral package, is to have people to come and to be sad.
Wow.
Yeah. Because the more people who are sad at your funeral,
the more honor given to
the more honor is given to
the family. And man, that's kind of twisted.
Yeah, in some sense. I think it's not unlike, I've been to lots of funerals. I've performed, administered many, many funerals, as a hospice chaplain and healthcare chaplain.
Yeah.
And there, I can tell the people who are wealthy, it's not so much for how big the number of people are there, but it is what kind of casket they have and the other features that go along with it.
Sure.
And there's definitely some ostentatious... conspicuous consumption kind of things that happen in funerals, even in our culture, for sure.
I've built pine caskets for two people.
I didn't know that.
They were buried in them.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
That suits me fine.
Yeah.
Put me in a pine box. I don't know. We've talked about cremation and stuff before, but
yeah.
Keep it simple, in my opinion.
Yeah. Okay, how about this one? You can get a job as an iceberg mover.
An iceberg mover.
So this is someone who goes out in ships. That's exactly right. So in shipping routes, when ships come and then there's an iceberg in the way. So this is like similar to a tugboat or something that you go out and they got to
call up the iceberg mover.
And you have to move the iceberg out of the way so that this big, these shipping lanes can remain open.
Yeah.
That's about $25 an hour or so.
That makes sense to me. I think that's I could do that.
But not one that you normally think of.
Yeah.
There's also, you could be a professional mermaid. or merman, I guess.
Like in a restaurant aquarium?
Something like that. There's all different kinds of things. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, there are lots of people who do that, and I think that's a growing profession now. You can go to, you know, Disney World, or you can go to the ocean or something. I think for little girls' birthday parties, you know. You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, if we could just make zoos with you could
with
be
people
a,
in them.
You could be a professional cow, or
a professional cow.
A professional what? A gorilla?
I suppose.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's much desire for that, but mermaids there is apparently.
Yeah. I want to see you do your best gorilla chest beating. You're
chest
thinking
beating?
About it.
Well,
yeah, he's moving away from the microphone, folks.
Okay. I don't know.
Yeah. First of all, they do it open-handed.
Oh, do they really?
Close-handed, yeah.
Okay. I'm not sure that I've ever paid attention to that.
Yeah. It's an interesting display.
Yeah. Yeah.
You
I'm sure I've seen it, but I haven't
jump on the internet and see
paid attention to it.
Yeah. So it's like a silverback's threat.
Yeah,
you know,
sure,
and
sure,
they'll rush you and they'll be beating their chest and making
that sound. Yes, yes,
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so maybe you could do that professionally. Get some tips from the internet. And...
Yeah, apparently not. I haven't paid them close enough attention to do it well enough.
You have to do a little research.
I have to go do my research, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, Dave, let me give you one more.
Yeah.
How about a professional drying paint watcher?
Come on.
Professionally, you watch paint dry.
Come
yes.
on.
No, this is a real job because you have to get... So when they have new paint...
Yeah.
chemicals or a new formula for paint, then you paint the wall and you sit there and watch it and take notes on how quickly it dries and what the texture is and how it the timing of it all. And and there's people who do that all day, every day, because they're constantly getting new formulas and trying new ways of formulating paint. A professional drying paint watcher.
That's rough.
$27 an hour.
Yeah. See, I mean, I of course did a lot of painting.
I know you did.
Painting is really boring.
It's awful.
It's mind numbing.
Yeah.
Right. And that's, I mean, you're still moving and you're seeing change and all
yeah.
that, you know, still like, and,
yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
you make more
you're
money.
You're making progress.
You can make more money. You
yeah.
make progress. But it's still like there are a lot of alcoholics in painting because
sure.
you're trying to, you know, cope with
yeah.
the mind numbing,
yeah,
mundane
yeah.
nature of it. But to sit there and just be timing it. You know, dry and taking notes on
and
how
taking
it's
notes on how it's drying and what it looks like.
Yeah,
and, oh,
man,
that sounds awful, doesn't it?
Really bad. You know, some people are like, "This is the perfect job." What are you talking about?
I guess for some people, for any of these jobs that we've talked about, someone thinks that that's the perfect job for them.
Yeah,
I really believe that. There's yeah. you know, there's so many. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't like being in the north, but I think of all those that you've mentioned, I would pick moving icebergs. Because at least you're captaining a boat, and you know you get out and about and get some fresh air. And
you know, I think I might
something that
agree with
productive.
You there. I think, yeah, I think that's right. I think
yeah.
the same for me. Moving icebergs. Hopefully that,
yeah.
that would have some adventure to it, but it would also allow for
yeah.
some sort of...
There could be some danger involved too, you know.
Sure, sure,
yeah.
sure. Of course, of course.
So,
but there would be a variety of different things and... there would be downtime for sure. They would allow me to think or read or listen to podcasts or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that it's not the job I want, but of the ones we've
right.
just listed,
right.
there it is. Which would you rather?
Yeah.
I'd rather that one.
Yeah. I could milk snakes too, but I don't want to get
nope.
bit.
Nope, 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 nope.
Don't want to get bit.
Not interested in snakes.
Yeah.
Well, 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 Dave, looks like we've reached the end of another wild ride on the Hopper Podcast, where we talk about things that matter and things that don't.
Yes, and we definitely had both of those today for sure. You know, infertility really matters. It hurts people.
It sure does.
It's a significant challenge, and
yeah,
I want
yeah,
you to
yeah.
know we care about that. We have had our own experiences with it,
yeah.
and we feel for people.
Yeah, yeah.
So that really matters, but we've also had a few laughs today as well.
We sure have. And hey, big shout out to all of you lovely listeners. Thanks for putting up with our shenanigans and tuning into our episodes.
Yeah, without you guys, it would just be me criticizing Willie for his taste in 70s rock music and TV shows.
Hey, now, let's not start that debate again. We have already established that you have questionable taste in music.
I think I've established that you have questionable taste, and, you know, I think it's obvious.
All right, well, I think that we can keep arguing about that. But if you want to join in on the madness or you just want to say hi to us, check the show notes for ways that you can contact us by text, by email, by Facebook. We promise that we won't bite unless you want to argue about 70s rock music, because then Dave is likely to bite.
Well, I'm game. Yeah.